This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. And I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining me as always. The NFL draft has come and went. Here at Saturday to Sunday, we have been covering it wire to wire. If you miss any of the coverage over the 3 days of the 2024 NFL draft, make sure you listen to it. I did a round one recap pod right after Thursday night concluded. Then I did another instant reaction day two, recapping round two, group three. And then I did a podcast Saturday night after the NFL draft concluded, recapping rounds four through seven as well. For three rounds, literally gave my thoughts on every single pick in the NFL draft, 1 through 100. In rounds four through seven, I went through every pick and talked about the ones that I thought stood out the most, whether it was the fit, whether it was the player, whether it was the value. I went through and talked about the ones that I thought were most important to discuss. Here at Saturday to Sunday, we wait for this draft weekend. We plan months and months, the whole year, bringing us to there. We do not turn the page quickly here at Saturday to Sunday. We cover it, break it down from every angle. Tonight's a Dynasty Rookie Ranking show. Where my Dynasty Rookie Rankings are right now, they are constantly changing and adjusting, and I will share that on Twitter at times. I will talk about it on the pod from here to there. If you get the premium notebooks, you could get the updates in the rankings notebook, you know, in real time. But besides that, we will do IDP rookie ranking podcast shows. We will do a division by division recap shows. We will bring on tons and tons and tons of guests. We will set up a rookie mock draft podcast. We will continue to cover the NFL draft and everything for months here at Saturday, Sunday, whether all of May, all of June, part of July, before we maybe start to turn the page, kind of do some other stuff before we then get to the new wave of prospects sometime in August. So we do not rush into the next wave of players. There's so much to break down, from schematic fits to how it fits with the new roster, dynasty value, redraft value. So much to cover from the NFL draft that we will continue to cover it, now in these months leading into training camp, where a lot of podcasts slowly start to either turn the page or just start talking about the season. Here, we will continue to cover every angle of the NFL draft. Again, if you're enjoying all the coverage I've been putting out, please, it is not too late to still get the premium notebooks. I know the draft has come and went. The draft projections notebook, while that was most valuable during draft weekend, it still got my thoughts on about 400 prospects, offense and defense. So if you're in IDP leagues, my thoughts on the defensive players, you know, how they, you know, are they big tackle guys? You know, how they might fit in. But then really the rankings notebook is probably the bread and butter now. You know, Dynasty Rookie Rankings, IDP Rookie Rankings coming out within the next couple weeks, Dynasty Positional Overall Rankings. In the past, I've done blended rankings, blending the last two years' rookie classes. So it would be the 24 rookies with the 23 rookies that are now entering their second year, how I would kind of rank them just to kind of see where I would situate people. If you're talking about trading people and appropriately valuing, you know, new rookie picks coming up here in your rookie drafts over the next, you know, month, 2 months, however, whenever you do your rookie drafts. So lots to talk about in the rankings notebook. And then you also got the scouting notebook, which still has all our detailed scouting reports on so many of these offensive prospects that got taken, you know, full strengths, developmental areas, functional areas, how they win, NFL role, fantasy ceiling, all that stuff as well. Best way to get to the notebooks is s2sfootball.com. Check out the premium content tab, and for $9.99, you get access to all three notebooks. If you bought it in the past but haven't picked it up yet this year, we consider you doing that and would greatly appreciate the help us to continue to do what we do here. So, on each of the recap pods during draft weekend, I kind of shared my initial Dynasty rookie rankings. And then I let a couple days go past now, and now I've kind of, you know, formalized it for now. If I sit down and redo this tomorrow and start from scratch, these rankings are going to look a little bit different. So there'll be constant changes here. I'll talk about some things in the rankings that I think are, you know, points of discussion that I could see going either way, kind of how I would tier things where I could see me really adjusting and changing the rankings within this. And that's what we'll kind of talk through a little bit tonight. So let's get right into it. Let's start the quarterback position. Caleb Williams, number one, you know, dynasty rookie ranking for the quarterback position, obviously went to Chicago. Jaden Daniels would be my number two quarterback for dynasty rookie drafts. Number three would be Drake May, who ended up in New England. Number four would be J.J. McCarthy, who went to Minnesota. Number five would be Bo Nix, who went to Denver. Number six would be Michael Penix Jr., who ended up stunningly going to Atlanta. Number seven would be Spencer Rattler, who ended up on the Saints. Number eight would be Jordan Travis, who ended up with the Jets. Number nine would be Joe Milton, who ended up in New England. Number 10 would be Devin Leary, who ended up in Baltimore. And number 11 would be Michael Pratt, who ended up in Green Bay. I do not, and you'll notice tonight, I do not include any of the UDFAs right now in my Dynasty rookie rankings. If I was doing a draft tomorrow, this weekend, to be frankly honest with you, unless it's one that has like a detailed like taxi squad and you're picking tons and tons of picks, I would not be drafting any UDFAs. They're always long shots to make the roster. If you have a draft later in the summer or, you know, later on in the offseason where maybe you find out that they really exploded at a rookie minicamp, or, you know, if you have a draft really late sometime in August right before the season starts or whatever, you know, and maybe they shine in training camp or preseason, that's a different story. But right now, I'm not putting UDFAs. There's almost no guarantee that they're definitively on the roster. So much would have to break for them to get an opportunity that I think you're kind of hoping too much to put those guys over guys that get drafted even in round five, round six, and round seven. So you won't see any of those. At some point, maybe I'll do like a UDFA show. But I just really feel like there wasn't a lot of UDFA guys this year. I think between, you know, people staying in college due to the NIL money and the transfer portal and then the COVID year, there was just not a lot. I never remember a UDFA signing period being so lackluster in terms of the names that we usually are excited to see, like, oh, this guy fell out of the draft. Surprisingly, he ended up here. It's almost like another free, you know, debris pick. There wasn't much of that. So I don't think there's a lot to really get into with the UDFAs. At the quarterback position, I think it's kind of pretty self-explanatory, to be honest with you. I think Caleb Williams right now is the clear one. I think Jaden Daniels is the clear two. I could understand people maybe swapping Drake May and J.J. McCarthy between the three and the fourth spot. The way I would emphasize this is, now, a little bit of bias goes into it is because I believe much higher in Drake May becoming a franchise quarterback than I do J.J. McCarthy. But my recommendation for fantasy would be this. If you are in a super flex league or whatever and you are in need of a guy right now being a solid, serviceable fantasy quarterback, I could totally understand having J.J. McCarthy ahead of Drake May. He steps into an ideal situation with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, Aaron Jones, great play caller. So I expect J.J. McCarthy to look a lot better in year one and be more of a fantasy asset early in his career. But I still think the questions about ceiling, long-term upside, listen, I mean, the Vikings themselves wanted to get up to take Drake May. You know, the Giants wanted Drake May in a trade-up, and they passed on J.J. McCarthy. The Vikings didn't move up aggressively until they were one pick away for J.J. McCarthy. So I think the league has told us that they significantly like Drake May more than J.J. McCarthy. They both have an athletic component to their game in terms of rushing ability. But I just think Drake May's ceiling is so much higher, and I get it. The New England environment right now is not nearly as conducive to what J.J. McCarthy's stepping into. But I think it would be, if you just are drafting a quarterback and hoping for a long-term big-time hit, I think it's Drake May hands down. If you're looking for someone right now to kind of help, you know, maybe settle your position, a guy who can play this year, then I understand the J.J. McCarthy scenario. So that would be one pivot point. The other pivot point is between Bo Nix and Michael Penix. And I would kind of take the same approach in terms of if you feel like you need somebody in the short term, you got to take Bo Nix because he's going to get every opportunity to start. But if you're willing, and someone might say, well, you have the reverse. Well, yeah, that's because Drake May, you know, usually I would say I would favor more the guy who I think can give you immediate production. So, but the Drake May scenario is I'm just so much higher on him compared to J.J. McCarthy as a ceiling play. I think Michael Penix has a higher ceiling than Bo Nix. I think their floors are about the same, but I don't think the ceiling is so much higher for Michael Penix to Bo Nix that I'd be willing to take Bo Nix ahead or put him ahead in my rankings. Sorry, I'd be less likely to put Michael Penix ahead in my rankings over Bo Nix, considering we got to wait 2 or 3 years. But again, if your quarterback situation is fine for the short term and you don't need anything from either Bo Nix or Michael Penix for a couple years, then I wouldn't be willing to take Michael Penix ahead of Bo Nix. But because their ceilings are closer than the ceilings of Drake May and J.J. McCarthy to me, that's why here I went with the guy who's going to get immediate playing time, but they're right next to each other in my overall ranks. So I think the Bo Nix, Michael Penix can go either way. I think Michael Penix has a slightly higher ceiling, and I like the weapons there if he gets to take over that offense. But I do think Bo Nix is going to start right away, and I think Sean Payton will make a pretty friendly offense for him. He's done that in the past for people. I think he's a good offensive mind. So I can see a scenario where Bo Nix has got some fantasy viability and he's going to get on the field quicker. So that would be the two pivot points, May and McCarthy, and then Nix and Penix. I could see anybody, you know, flipping McCarthy first, May next, Penix first, Nix. I get it. So I think they're close. I have both of them next to each other. In my overall super flex ranks, I have May at 6 and McCarthy at 7. I have Bo Nix at 17, and I have Michael Penix at 18. So I have them grouped together in my overall big board ranks as well. Very easy for somebody to maybe flip those two. If we take this over to the running back position, my number one rookie running back is Jonathan Brooks, who ended up in Carolina. Number two is Trey Benson, who ended up with the Arizona Cardinals. Number three is Blake Corum, who went to the Rams. Number four is Marshawn Lloyd, who went to the Green Bay Packers. Number five is Jalen Wright, who went to Miami. Number six is Ray Davis, who went to the Buffalo Bills in round four. Number seven is Tyrone Tracy Jr., who ended up with the Giants at the end of the fifth. Number eight is Bucky Irvin, who went to Tampa Bay. Number nine is Will Shipley, who went to the Eagles. Number 10 is Isaac Arendo, who went to the 49ers. Number 11 is Audric Esteme, who went to Denver. Number 12 is Kamani Vidal, who went to the Chargers. Number 13 is Braylon Allen, who went to the Jets. Number 14 is Rashid Ali, who went to Baltimore. Number 15 was Dylan Lobb, who went to the Raiders. Number 16 is Sione Faki. I put him here in my running back list, who went to the Lions. Might play safety, might play running back, might do both with special teams. Number 17 is Isaiah Davis, who went to the Jets. Number 18 is Jason McClellan, who went to the Falcons. Number 19 is Jawan Jordan, who went to the Texans. And number 20 is Kylan Robinson, who went to Jacksonville. I think he's going to be mostly a special teams player. Overall, the landing spots, the draft capital, not a very strong running back group. We kind of knew that going in. But I do think there's some interesting landing spots that guys could emerge and become fantasy factors. To me, I do have Jonathan Brooks as my clear number one. Couple reasons for that. I think there's a opportunity there. He got really strong draft capital. They moved up for him and took him. I think it was at pick 47. So you're talking about a team like that's not that far off. You know, we saw guys like Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker go in the early portion of round two. Jonathan Brooks went about 12, 13 picks later, smack dab almost in the middle of round two. and they traded up for him. So that tells me is they didn't want to lose out on him. They probably rated him almost similarly to where Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker got picked. But obviously they had used their first pick in round two to swap up to the last pick of round one to take the wide receiver. But my guess is they probably had Jonathan Brooks pretty close on their draft board to where they took Xavier Leggett, but they felt like it was more important to get the wide receiver that they wanted there to help Bryce Young. But I do think they are very high on Jonathan Brooks. I think he probably has the best chance of almost anybody in this draft class to be a true three down back. So for me, Jonathan Brooks is my clear number one. Right now, he's number nine overall in my Superflex big board ranks. That's over some really good round one wide receivers. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. To me, Trey Benson is clearly my number two. He does have round three draft capital, which I start to get a little skittish in round three, but it was the second pick in round three. James Conner is not a long-term answer there, so I think this year Benson will work in tandem with Conner, and I'd expect Benson to slowly take more of the workload as the year goes on, I think, and then maybe by the second year be the leader of that commit, like that backfield. But there always is some risk with round three. There's a scenario where Arizona drafts another running back next year, but in round two. Or does the scenario they go out in free agency and they make a splash next year in free agency? I don't think Carolina's going to do that. It's very, very rare that a team invests good second round draft capital in a running back and he doesn't get every opportunity to be the leader there. So I think that this makes Jonathan Brooks a little bit safer than Trey Benson. But I really like Trey Benson. I do think he will seize that opportunity there. He was my number one back in the class. So I like him a lot. He's just a little bit further down in my overall big board. But to me, it's Jonathan Brooks is a clear one. Trey Benson's a clear two. I think that 3-4 are interchangeable. And I get some people want to put Jalen Wright in the mix there. And listen, I love Jalen Wright. I was a huge Jalen Wright fan. He was my number three running back just on film. But let's not lose sight of the fact that he does have round four draft capital, and it was late round four. Let's not lose the fact that Devin Achane was a flat-out superstar in his rookie year, even if you think Devin Achane is a 12-13 touch guy. Let's not lose focus of the fact that Raheem Mostert is still there, and let's not lose the fact that Miami regime likes investing in running backs. And there's no way to not know that there could be another running back come around next year that they want to draft in the second round or third round to add to that mix because they do deem it an important position. So to me, I have Blake Corum and Marshawn Lloyd ahead of Jalen Wright. One for opportunity, two for draft capital. So for me, those two things put them in a separate tier for me. I think it's hard to rank Corum and Lloyd because people don't really realize this. It sounded like that Josh Jacobs deal was a big deal, 4 years, $48 million, but it's not nowhere near the Saquon deal. The guaranteed money is basically like $13 million. So the Packers can get out of that Josh Jacobs deal after this year and just have the prorated signing bonus left as the only dead cap money. So there's a scenario where Josh Jacobs only spends 1 year in Green Bay and they could give the backfield lead role to Marshawn Lloyd in as early as a year. So I do think people are maybe a little bit confused by that and not really understand what the contract of Josh Jacobs looks like. There's not nearly long-term stability there. There's not even, I know with running backs, there's never long-term stability, but there's not even like, we're not even guaranteed to see Josh Jacobs in Green Bay for 2 years, let alone 3 years. Like with Saquon, I kind of feel like he's going to be in Philly 2 or 3 years. And they could probably get out of him after 2 years, but he's going to be there for at least 2 years. When it comes to Josh Jacobs, there's a very strong possibility he's only there 1 year, the way that contract was created. It sounded like a big deal. It sounded like a lot of security for a running back, but it really wasn't. And then on the flip side, Blake Corum, Kyron Williams was a superstar last year. But who's to say that Sean McAfee and the Rams organization doesn't look at Blake Corum as a better version of Kyron Williams? Blake Corum was more regarded coming out as a draft prospect. They invested a higher draft pick on Blake Corum. And then Kyron Williams is already, you know, next year will be his third year in the league. And then the following year, it'll be his free agent year. There's a scenario where they, you know, eventually have an even, you know, backfield there. And then they let Kyron Williams walk in 2 years and they let Blake Corum play out his rookie contract. That's not inconceivable to see as well. So to me, the Blake Corum, Marshawn Lloyd thing can go either way. If you think Josh Jacobs is only going to be there 1 year, you might want to move Marshawn Lloyd ahead of Blake Corum, because then there's an opportunity to say, okay, Kyron Williams is probably going to be with the Rams at least 2 years, but if Josh Jacobs is only going to be there 1 year, well, then there might be a bigger, slightly bigger opportunity for Marshawn Lloyd in a year. I have it Corum, Lloyd right now. I just kind of, to me, their situations both have another guy in there. They're both good offenses. So I just slightly went with my film evals, which I had Blake Corum as my fourth running back in this class. I had Marshawn Lloyd as my fifth. So I kept it that way because their draft capital was similar. The landing spot situation were similar. So I kept it that way. But I do think, as much as I like Jalen Wright, I do think they are a step and a tier above Jalen Wright, because I do think Jalen Wright, we don't know. There's a lot of factors. He was a late fourth round pick. That opens up. They can easily overdraft him next year with an earlier prospect. We know that they highly value the running back position, like I talked about. So that would be my thoughts on Jalen Wright. I do like him, obviously, a lot. It's a fantastic offense, an explosive player that in that offense could be another home run threat like Devin Achane, better receiving ability probably than Devin Achane. But Devin Achane had higher draft capital. Raheem Mostert is still there. You know, the offense is still built around Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So there's a lot of guys there. So I do think Jalen Wright could be a part of that, and it's exciting to see him in that offense. But I do think it's one of those things where people might slightly overdrafting Jalen Wright due to the excitement that it is that Dolphins offense. But let's not lose the sight that Devin Achane was a flat-out star in his rookie year. They still have Raheem Mostert, who had like 20 touchdowns last year. So there's scenarios where Jalen Wright does not get a lot of opportunity early in his career. And then he still got a late fourth round draft capital. So that always leads me to be a little bit concerned. Ray Davis, to me, is kind of another one of those guys that I kind of think he's in a tier of his own. I don't think he has the upside of Jalen Wright, but I also do think that there's a clear path of Ray Davis getting a real shot in Buffalo with James Cook to be that duo where maybe eventually Ray Davis even carries a heavier workload than James Cook. And James Cook, while he gets the same amount of touches, it'll be mixed between, you know, catching and rushing. I do think Ray Davis can catch the ball out of the backfield, so I think just some interchangeable with both of those backs. So I like Ray Davis. I like the landing spot with Buffalo. I think he can form a really good 1-2 duo with James Cook. After that, I'd be very surprised if anybody's top six has other names in it. I think if you have other names in it, you might be getting a little bit cute. I like Kamani Vidal, but I think you might be getting a little cute if you put Kamani Vidal as a sixth round pick in your top six there and over guys who were taken in the fourth round with good offenses, right? Miami, Buffalo, Green Bay, the Rams, that Corum, Lloyd, Wright, Davis, they ended up on good offenses, explosive offenses. So I think those guys got to be that 3-6 range after we talk about Brooks and Benson. After that, I think you could really make the case 7-13, 7-even if you want to say 14. I think you really can make the case 7-13, 7-14. You really can rank them in any which way you want, and I think you can make a case for it. All of the guys in that range either have fourth round draft capital to early sixth round draft capital. And that's a unique situation with Kamani Vidal, or I wouldn't even be including him in this. But I just think it's a kind of an ideal landing spot for Kamani Vidal, because I think he's a guy that Jim Harbaugh can trust. He probably likes the pass protection aspect of him. So I think there's a lot of things to like about Kamani Vidal. But for me, I put Tyrone Tracy there for a couple of reasons. One, I loved him pre-draft. You know, it wasn't just me. Connor Rogers had him fourth. Len Zerline had him fifth. Greg Cosell was a huge fan of him. So a lot of people really liked Tyrone Tracy Jr. I was a big fan of him. I said that I think his early career deployment and usage could be very similar to an Alvin Kamara type player. I stand by that. If you want to think Antonio Gibson, fine. But what I also think it's important is, yeah, he went in the fifth round. I think the Giants probably would have taken him a little bit earlier. I think early fifth, if they hadn't swapped picks as part of the Brian Burns trade, I wouldn't have been surprised if they targeted him in the early portion of fifth round. I think he could add a receiving component. Obviously, he's a former receiver. But I also think he could work his way to maybe being number two on the depth chart and take that spot from Eric Gray, who I liked last year too. I just like Tracy Moore. And listen, Devin Singletary signed a two-year deal there. And Devin Singletary is a guy who's going to get what's there. He's not a big play threat. So I think there's an opportunity for Tracy to kind of develop here and get a real shot to be a weapon and a playmaker in this offense. So to me, when I compare him to Buck Irving, to Will Shipley, to Isaac Arendo, to Audric Estime, and to Kamani Vidal, but again, he's a little bit of a wild card, but the sixth round draft capital there, but he's in the mix here. I just think Tyrone Tracy's potential ceiling is a little bit higher due to his receiving and rushing capabilities. The depth chart is there for the taking. So when it's there for the taking, I love the player on film, and he's got that receiving component. I think that's what intrigues me the most about Tyrone Tracy. But like I said, 7 through 13, 7 through 14, you're going to rank them based on whether you want to rank them based on your own film evals, whether you want to rank them based on landing spots, whether you want to rank them based on immediate opportunity. There's a lot of ways you can rank these guys. For me, I laid out the reasons why I have Tracy at 7. Bucky Irving, I wasn't a huge Bucky Irving fan before the draft, but I still think he's a guy that you could see a scenario where he gets an opportunity and he plays a role, like he outperforms his draft stock and he outperforms in a way Kyren Williams did, because he's a very similar profile to Kyren Williams. Didn't test out nearly as well as maybe people expected. Quicker than fast, got receiving chops. Rashad White is a good back who I've been a fan of since he came out of college. But I also don't think Rashad White has been as good as maybe his peripheral stats have shown. So I do think there's an opportunity for Bucky Irving to quickly be the number two there and kind of see, does Rashad White continue to play as well as he has? Or is there an opportunity for Bucky Irving to eat into that a little bit? So that's why I have Bucky Irving next. Will Shipley, I like him a lot as a player. I think he probably will eventually push Kent Gainwell off the roster. And I think they'll find ways to utilize him a little bit. But it's going to be Saquon's show for at least 2 years there. So now you're talking about a guy who was a late fourth round pick. They just signed Saquon to a pretty lucrative deal for a running back. So he's probably locked in for 2 years. They seem to really still trust and like Kent Gainwell. So I think it's going to be hard for Will Shipley to even get on the field year one. We'll see from there. But the profile of that player, receiving and rushing, I like that. So that's why I have him next there. Garendo in San Francisco. Listen, he could basically be another, Elijah Mitchell. I think he fits this scheme well. But they have Christian McCaffrey there. They have other backs in the saddle there. So what are we talking about here? Can he work his way to the next Elijah Mitchell in that ideal scheme is why I put him next on this list. I wasn't a huge Audric Estime fan coming out. I think his best case scenario is he seizes an opportunity and he becomes the Chris Carson-like player. But he's got fifth-round draft capital. Javonte Williams is still there. And we could easily see Denver pick another back next year in the draft that Sean Payton likes. But there is an opportunity there. There is an opportunity there. Javonte Williams has not been a guy with ideal health. I'd be very surprised if they gave him a second contract. So if Audric Estime looks good, he could move up this depth chart. Somebody wants to put Audric Estime at 7 on these ranks, but the running back position, I totally get it. I think you're buying then that you're saying, okay, I think he could be the guy that replaces Javonte Williams on this roster as the lead back. The problem is there's going to be running backs like this every year drafted in rounds 4 through 6. And some of them would be by the same teams that are picking here. That's what makes it tricky. And the next, Kamani Vidal, we talked about it. That, you know, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, that's what's on the roster right now for the Chargers. So there's an opportunity there. But again, Jim Harbaugh, a guy who loves to run the ball, if he sees an opportunity a year from now to either get a premier free agent running back that hits the market at a reasonable cost, or if he sees an opportunity to draft somebody on day two after he kind of starts to establish his culture there, they probably prioritize other positions in year one. But do we really think that Jim Harbaugh at some point is not going to prioritize the running back position? And I think that would come with a bigger investment than a sixth round pick. So Kamani Vidal might have a better opportunity than anybody I just talked about in this grouping here from 7 to 12 to seize this year. But could he also be the next James Robinson? And I think he's a more talented player than James Robinson. But I'm talking more the situation where James Robinson burst onto the scene that first year. But then, you know, he quickly was outdrafted and other people got an opportunity. You know, they drafted Travis Etienne and the rest is history. So I do think that's something that needs to be considered. After that, I personally wouldn't put Braylon Allen or Rasheen Ali in this mix, especially not Braylon Allen. Because what's the best case scenario with Braylon Allen? Breece Hall's a superstar. He's probably going to get a second contract from the Jets. And they just drafted Israel Abakanda in the fourth round, I think, last year. And they drafted another running back this year in the sixth round. So there's a lot of moving parts there. And I just don't really like the player in Braylon Allen. If he had a round three draft capital, I probably would have had to reassess the situation. But he's got late round four draft capital. That's where they drafted Israel Abakanda last year. They drafted another running back in round six. And they have a superstar premier young running back in Breece Hall, who's going to be there a couple more years, even if it involves a franchise tag after two more years, if they don't work out a contract. So Braylon Allen's down for me. Rasheen Ali, obviously you got Keaton Mitchell there, a young player, but obviously Derrick Henry's going to be there for a year or two. You know, and Rasheen Ali's a fifth-round pick. So you get into the thing of, okay, Baltimore always kind of emphasizes the run game. Do we think they're going to give the keys to a fifth-round running back in a year or two? They drafted J.K. Dobbins in the second round the year he was selected. They went out and got a high-profile free agent in Derrick Henry. The Ravens look at the running back position as an important part of their roster. So even if Derrick Henry is only there 1 year, do we really think they're going to give the keys to the kingdom to a fifth-round running back? I have a hard time seeing that, and this is coming from a Rasheen Ali fan. So that's kind of how I have the running back situation. If we take this over, let's do the tight ends quick and just get it out of the way. My tight end rankings, Brock Bowers, number one. Ben Sinnott, number two. Obviously, Bowers went to the Raiders. Sinnott went to the Commanders. Number three, Jatavion Sanders went to the Panthers. Number four, Theo Johnson went to the Giants. Number five, Eric Gall went to the Bengals. Number six, Jared Wiley went to the Chiefs. Number seven, Cade Stover went to the Texans. Number eight, Tip Ryman went to the Arizona Cardinals. Number nine, Jaheim Bell went to the Patriots. Number 10, Tanner McLaughlin to the Bengals. Number 11, A.J. Barner to Seattle. Number 12, Devin Culp to Tampa Bay. Bowers is the clear number one guy. I think the better question is, where does he fall in overall big boards? I have the three big wide receivers ahead of him. I have the four quarterbacks ahead of him. I think the first sticky point in your overall big board ranks is, where do you put Jonathan Brooks relative to Brock Bowers? And where do you put the other first round or early second round wide receivers relative to Brock Bowers? So do you put Jonathan Brooks ahead of him? Do you put Xavier Worthy or Ladd McConkey or Brian Thomas or Keon Coleman or Xavier Leggett or Ricky Purcell? Where do those round one or tippy top of round two wide receivers go relative to Brock Bowers? Where do you put the top running back in Jonathan Brooks to Brock Bowers? I think those are the questions with Brock Bowers. Right now, he's eighth in my overall big board Superflex rankings. I could see people moving him a little bit lower. I've already thought about putting maybe Jonathan Brooks ahead of over him. And the wide receivers, I think it's a little bit of a toss-up, because when I look at those wide receivers, I think their ceiling is probably good wide receiver twos if they really hit their ceiling. I think it's probably more low wide receiver twos, kind of like what I thought about like Jordan Addison and those guys last year. If Xavier Worthy and Ladd McConkey and those guys hit, I think they're probably low wide receiver twos, maybe mid. But if Brock Bowers hits, we're talking about a top four, top five tight end, that's probably more valuable than a mid to late wide receiver too. So I think that's why I would have Brock Bowers ahead of those other wide receivers. I think the Jonathan Brooks one is a tricky one because if Jonathan Brooks hits, he could easily be an RB1. I think you can make the case that RB1 over a fourth or fifth best tight end probably favors to the running back. But then you talk about longevity, that favors back to the tight end, which is why I put Brock Bowers ahead of Jonathan Brooks for now in my overall big board. I think Ben Sinnott is the clear number two tight end. I don't think that's much for debate. I think trying to put him in the overall big board with all the wide receivers is a little bit tricky. To me, I have Jatavion Sanders clearly as my three because I still like the pass catching upside. He's already shown that he can do it. The rest of the guys, Dio Johnson, Eric Hall, Jared Wiley, whether it's draft capital, whether it's immediate opportunity, whether it's banking on them being more productive in the NFL than college, there's question marks about all of them. Jatavion Sanders really produced in college. He showed that he could be a focal point of an offense. So for me, Jatavion, and now he's going in an offense that is not loaded with receiving options. They're trying to build up the receivers there. They went out and got Deontay Johnson. Last year it was Jonathan Mingo. This year they drafted Xavier Leggett. So they're trying to make investments there. But I think there's a path for Jatavion Sanders. I think I've mentioned it a bunch of times that like I could see an Isaiah Likely path there for Jatavion Sanders. So he would be my number three. Then I really think four through six, you really can rank in any way you want. And I cut it off at six because I think Cade Stover at seven. You know, Dalton Schultz just signed the contract extension there. I think Cade Stover might end up just being a good number two tight end in real life. I'm not sure it's going to translate to a lot of fantasy viability. But I think four through six are interesting. Dio Johnson, Eric Hall, Jared Wiley. If Kelsey doesn't sign that extension, maybe Jared Wiley's fifth over Eric Hall. But we don't really know if that extension really means things are going to change for Travis Kelsey. I could still see him retiring after a year, 2 years, not playing out for three more years or whatever now. The contract extension has taken him to. But I do think if he's there, Jared Wiley's just waiting in the wings. You just got to kind of hold on to him. But I do think he could be their next starting tight end. I think he's a guy that could be a good pass-catching option and fill that role for Kansas City when the day comes that Travis Kelsey's no longer there. But I do think because Kelsey's still in the fold, I am more intrigued by Dio Johnson and Eric Hall. They were all fourth-round picks, these guys. I think Darren Waller is going to retire. Dio Johnson has this elite athletic upside, was an average receiver at best in college, so you're banking on him outproducing his college production. I think that's possible. So I like the situation with Dio Johnson, an immediate opportunity for him to seize it, and I think there's a lot of untapped upside there. Eric Hall's a wild card because he's a better pure pass catcher than Dio Johnson. He's a good athlete in his own right, but he's got injury concerns. Does he play a lot this year? How much does he play? Then you take into account that they drafted another tight end two rounds later that a lot of people really liked. Daniel Jeremiah had him as his 61st player in the entire draft in Tanner McLaughlin out of Arizona. So having both of them, I think, makes it a little bit more intriguing of, okay, how high do you put Eric Hall in your tight end rankings? I slightly preferred Dio Johnson. I had him slightly ahead of him in my, I had him ahead of him in my film ranks going into the draft. They got the same draft capital. The Giants have Daniel Bellinger there. They drafted another guy in Tanner McLaughlin. So they're similar. If somebody wants to put Eric Hall ahead of Dio Johnson, I totally could see that happening. If somebody wants to put Jared Wiley ahead of both of them, I could totally see that as well. So to me, it's a clear 1-2-3, and then 4-5-6. You really can mix and match the Dio Johnson, Eric Hall, Jared Wiley. I think they probably should be very close to each other in your overall big board. I think Cade Stover then clearly is number seven. Tip Brimen, while he was drafted with good draft capital in round three, they have Trey McBride, who's only a third-year player who really broke out last year. So I don't see a lot of pass catching. If somebody wants to have Jaheim Bell or Tanner McLaughlin ahead of Tip Brimen, that's a move that I still might make for myself. I could totally see myself taking Tip Ryman and bringing him all the way to 11 and bumping up Jaheim Bell, Tanner McLaughlin, and A.J. Barner. But let's put into perspective, Jaheim Bell was a 7th-round draft capital. Tanner McLaughlin was a 6th-round draft capital. And A.J. Barner profiles more of like a Will Disley type in Seattle. So that's why I kept Tip Ryman there, number 8, due to the draft capital. But I really do think you can move him down if you have a feeling about Jaheim Bell and want to take a shot on the 7th-round pick that New England finds a way to utilize him. I could totally see you, somebody moving him a little bit higher. But most of these guys are probably bench, probably waiver wire or deep, deep, deep taxi squad type picks when you're talking about those guys. And let's take this to the best position of the rookies to talk about, and that's the wide receivers. My rankings are as follows. Marvin Harrison at number 1, who went to Arizona. Malik Nabers at number 2, who went to the Giants. Romo Odunze at number 3, who went to the Bears. Xavier Worthy at number 4, who went to KC. Ladd McConkey at number 5, who went to the Chargers. 6, Brian Thomas, who went to the Jaguars. 7, Keon Coleman, who went to the Bills. 8, Xavier Leggett, who went to Carolina. 9, Ricky Purcell, who went to San Francisco. 10, Jalen Polk, who went to New England. 11, A.D. Mitchell, who went to the Colts. Number 12, Malachi Corley, who went to the Jets. Number 13, Roman Wilson, who went to the Steelers. Number 14, Jermaine Burden, who went to the Bengals. Number 15, Troy Franklin, who went to the Broncos. Number 16, Javon Baker, who went to the Patriots. Number 17, Jalen McMillan, who went to the Tampa Bay Bucks. Number 18, Luke McCaffrey, who went to the Commanders. Number 19, Dez Walker, who went to the Ravens. Number 20, Jacob Cowing, who went to the 49ers. Number 21, Anais Smith, who went to the Eagles. Number 22, Malik Washington, who went to Miami. Number 23, Johnny Wilson, who went to Philadelphia. Number 24, Anthony Gould, who went to the Colts. Number 25, Jamari Brash, who went to the Browns. 26, Brendan Rice to the Chargers. 27, Bud Means to the Saints. 28, Jaquan Jackson to the Titans. 29, Cornelius Johnson to the Chargers. Number 30, Taj Washington to the Dolphins. 31, Casey Washington to the Falcons. Finishing it out, 32, Ryan Flournoy to the Cowboys. 33, Jordan Whittingham to the Rams. And 34, Devon Vale to the Broncos. So let's start at the top. Marvin Harrison, to me, clear number 1 wide receiver for Dynasty Rookie Rankings. The first real debate is Malik Nabers, Romo Odunze. Listen, you want to put Romo Odunze ahead of Malik Nabers? I totally get you. Draft capital, 6-9, irrelevant. Quarterback, obviously attached to Caleb Williams for the long term compared to Daniel Jones / Drew Lock in year 1, unknown moving forward. But to me, the difference is, 1, I think Malik Nabers is a little bit, it's clearly more explosive, ceiling higher than Romo Odunze. 2, he's going to immediately be fed targets early and often for the Giants. So even though the quarterback situation is unsettled, I think the volume that he sees and his ability to do things after the catch and the scheme that Dable will use him in will allow Malik Nabers to transition to a higher fantasy commodity early in his career. While Romo Odunze, I don't see a scenario where Romo Odunze is not 3rd in targets this year behind DJ Moore and behind Keenan Allen. Prior, not saying anything about injuries and time missed. Hopefully that's not an issue. Malik Nabers is going to be the Giants' clear number 1 wide receiver. His amount of targets, I think, is going to far be superior to anybody on the roster. So that's, for me, immediate production. Like them a little bit more on film. More explosive. Slightly higher ceiling. To me, and the depth chart a little bit clearer, to me, breaks the tie, if we want to talk about these guys being almost interchangeable, that makes me have Nabers slightly ahead of Odunze. I have them back-to-back in big board ranks. So, and if there was a non-Superflex league, I'd have the 3 wide receivers as my first 3 picks, hands down, Harrison, Nabers, Odunze. Right now, I have them in my overall big board at 3-4-5 after Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. To me, the next pivot point is that 4 through, you could even say 4 through 8, Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs, Ladd McConkey to the Chargers, Brian Thomas, Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, even want to throw Ricky Purcell in there. For me, I struggled with the Worthy, McConkey, Brian Thomas trio. I love Ladd McConkey. I think he's going to get fed with targets early. But he still kind of profiles as probably best case scenario. He's a low-end wide receiver too, in that similar way that I think that's Zay Flowers' ceiling, that's Jordan Addison's ceiling last year. Brian Thomas, while I think he might be a little bit slower out of the gate and there's more refinement and development needed, I do think the ceiling is higher for Brian Thomas. And then Xavier Worthy, I love Xavier Worthy on film. He's attached to the Kansas City Chiefs offense and Patrick Mahomes right now. So for me, I have Worthy at the highest because I do see a scenario where he's going to become an electric player, that he might not get the volume of these other guys, but attached to Patrick Mahomes, I think you're going to see a guy who can be 75 to 80 catches, but 1,100, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns. I think that's in the realm of possibility for Xavier Worthy. So I have it Worthy, McConkey, Thomas. You want to flip them in any which way, I kind of get it. So for me, that's the pivot, that's the second pivot point. It was Neighbors and Odunze were a pivot point, could go either way. And then Worthy, McConkey, Thomas could go either way. I slightly have it right now, Worthy, McConkey, Brian Thomas, but I think those are very much can be interchanged. For me then, I also think it's equally as hard ranking Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, and Ricky Purcell. If I knew Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel were going to get traded, Ricky Purcell would top this list. But I don't think they're going to get traded in year one. And who's to say they even get traded? Listen, we've seen the Eagles find a way to keep everybody. Who's to say they don't keep Deebo Samuel for another year or two and sign Brandon Ayuk to a contract extension? I don't think that's the most likely outcome, but I also don't think it's off the table when we've seen teams like the Eagles find a way to keep everybody. But for now, with that uncertainty, because I do think Ricky Purcell would flat out be awesome in that Kyle Shanahan scheme, but because there's some uncertainty right now in how quickly, we know McCaffrey's going to get his targets too, and George Kittle's there, there's a scenario that for 1 year, 2 years, he could be the fifth option. And then even if one leaves, how quickly does he get into position to be option one or option two, where he'd probably have to be really fantasy viable as a wide receiver? Not that he wouldn't have a lot of impact, but if we want him to have if we want him to be as impactful as Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel and be that type of guy in fantasy, well, he's going to probably have to get to their level of what their targets were the last couple of years. And we'll see how quickly that happens. So that's why I have him there. Keon Coleman, I like the player. I've compared him a lot to more like a Mike Williams and T. Higgins player. I love that he's being attached to Josh Allen. So that's why I have Keon Coleman slightly ahead. I like him better on film than Xavier Leggett. He's attached to a much better quarterback. And Carolina is throwing a lot of resources at the wide receiver position. We'll see how quickly Xavier Leggett becomes the focal point of that offense. Keon Coleman could be a focal point of the Bills' offense as soon as this year. Leggett might come along a little bit slower. I think Bryce Young is going to come along a lot slower in terms of being a high-end impact fantasy player. We already know Josh Allen is there. So for me, that's why I have it Coleman, Leggett, Purcell. I could see somebody having Leggett higher than Coleman, especially if you didn't like Coleman on film. And I could see Ricky Purcell being connected to the best offense of that group, potentially, and being a perfect scheme fit, but there's some more uncertainty with there. For me, the next pivot point was I could see Jalen Polk and A.D. Mitchell being ranked either way. I think A.D. Mitchell's ceiling is higher, but I think his floor is a lot lower. And let's not lose sight of the fact that I love Anthony Richardson, but he is a dual threat quarterback. They have Michael Pittman there. They just signed them long-term to be their alpha wide receiver. Josh Downs is a really, really good slot wide receiver who's going to get a lot of targets in the slot. So A.D. Mitchell, yes, do I think he could eventually get more targets than Josh Downs? Yeah. But I don't think that's going to be right away, and I don't even think it's definitively going to happen. So there's a scenario where A.D. Mitchell is the third option on that team. I think he's a more talented player than a guy like Gabriel Davis, for sure. But there's a scenario where he's like the Gabriel Davis of that offense, which means he's a very inconsistent boom or bust type player, which would make him like a wide receiver 3/4. While Jalen Polk might not be as flashy as A.D. Mitchell, but there's a scenario where he becomes Drake May's number one wide receiver. They obviously really liked him. They took him early round two, which leads me to believe they may have had him in their top 30 on their board. So they look at him as a guy who I think could be a very viable front end top wide receiver for their roster. And I think there's some more levels of questions with A.D. Mitchell. And there's a lot of guys there in Indianapolis. And I don't usually make that my basis. But when we're breaking ties between two people, and I think they are can go either way, I'm gonna lean with the guy who's got the clearer path and the higher draft capital, even though I liked A.D. Mitchell more on film. I think the Malachi Corley, Roman Wilson, Jermaine Burden discussion is interesting. Right now I have it in that order, Corley, Wilson, Burden. If you're talking straight upside, you might want to put Burden at the top of that list, especially if T. Higgins moves on. He'd be attached to Joe Burrow. Ja'Marr Chase is going to get all the attention. So I could see Jermaine Burden really thriving. But there's been some worries about Jermaine Burden and stuff. So that's got to be at least in the mix and into consideration here. I really like Malachi Corley and Roman Wilson. I like them more on film. And I think their depth charts are wide open. The Jets were trying to get up into the 40s to take Malachi Corley, as early as 45. If you want to believe the reports out there, they had him as their number 4th wide receiver in this class. They don't have anything after Garrett Wilson. He could be their number 2 option in terms of touches, receptions, sooner rather than later. Roman Wilson could become the new Deontay Johnson in Pittsburgh. A very high-volume guy. He could be George Pickens' running mate, and he could be the clear number 2 sooner rather than later. I think Jermaine Burton could become that, but we kind of got to see how the T. Higgins situation plays itself out. And even if he leaves, the Bengals could be aggressive in bringing in another high-end guy just to keep giving those weapons to Joe Burrow. After that, I think you could rank Troy Franklin, Javon Baker, Jalen McMillan, Luke McCaffrey in any which way. Jalen McMillan and Luke McCaffrey have third-round draft capital, but it's right at the end of the third round. And then Troy Franklin and Javon Baker have very early round 4 draft capital. So I think that's interchangeable. I think that's negligible. So for me, Troy Franklin was my highest-rated guy on film. And he's got in a wide open depth chart there with only Marvin Mims on the roster, I think is a significant long-term piece. And he immediately has a connection with his quarterback there now, Bo Nix from Oregon. I put Javon Baker next because the Patriots double-dipped the wide receiver early round 2, early round 4. I think he's going to get an immediate opportunity to try to be get an opportunity there. Where Jalen McMillan is going to play behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, so it's going to be a little slower to the mix. I like Jalen McMillan, but I do think Javon Baker's ceiling is higher. The immediate opportunity is higher. And the draft capital, like I said, is negligible. The difference. That's why I have Baker higher. Luke McCaffrey, listen, I thought it was a little bit of a reach in the end of the third round. I thought he's more of a mid to late 4th or an early 5th. I mean, they have McLaurin there. We'll see about Jahan Dotson. I mean, they did invest a first-round pick. I know it's a different regime. We'll see what they think about him. I don't think Luke McCaffrey stops them from next year going out and making another major investment at wide receiver to give Jaden Daniels another big-time weapon. Terry McLaurin isn't as young as people think. So I could see them still investing in a high-end resource at the wide receiver position in a year from now. After that, then, listen, Dez Walker, I like the ceiling. That's why I put him next. Jacob Cowan is an interesting player, but he's kind of got to wait that San Francisco situation out. I love Aeneas Smith and Johnny Wilson to the Eagles. But they kind of, if there was only one of the two, I'd be more excited about them. But they have A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith locked in long term. They got Saquon, Cachapez out of backfield for a couple of years. They got a great tight end in Dallas Goedert. What's left over? And it could be either one of those guys that becomes the next guy. So it's hard to rank them. Malik Washington, loved the player, but he fell all the way to like the sixth round. They have a lot of guys there. Obviously, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, strong run game. So what's the ceiling? Malik Washington gets the Braxton Berrios stuff? Yeah, that's going to have some spiked weeks. But I'd put him in that mix there with Anaya Smith and Johnny Wilson as interesting flyers. And then after that, Anthony Gould is kind of, I like the player, but he's kind of buried in that depth chart there with the Colts for now. Jamari Parash kind of buried in that Cleveland depth chart. I like Brendan Rice, the player, and there's an opening depth chart there in the Chargers, but he also was a seventh round pick. They're going to get a lot of competition over the next couple of years there. But means New Orleans maybe eventually works his way to being a number three or number four wide receiver. So there are my wide receiver rankings. I'm not going to go through my, this is longer than I expected to go. I'm not going to go through my whole big board rankings, but just to kind of give you a sneak peek at it, my super flex PPR big board rankings. Caleb Williams 1, Jaden Daniels 2, the trio of wide receivers, Marvin Harrison at 3, Malik Nabers at 4, Romo Dunze at 5, Drake May at 6, J.J. McCarthy at 7, I have Brock Bowers at 8, I have Jonathan Brooks at 9, I have Xavier Worthy at 10, Ladd McConkey at 11, Brian Thomas Jr. at 12, Keon Coleman at 13, Xavier Leggett at 14, Ricky Purcell at 15, Trey Benson at 16, Bo Nix and Michael Panix at 17, 18, Jalen Polk and A.D. Mitchell at 19, 20, Blake Corum and Marshawn Lloyd at 21 and 22. That's a little bit of a sticky point where I could easily see myself bumping Corum and Lloyd up and Lynn and Polk and Lynn down to there. At 23, I have Malachi Corley. 24, Roman Wilson. 25, Jermaine Burden. I sneak in there at 26, Ben Sinnott. 27, Jalen Wright. 28, Ray Davis. Then another trio of wide receivers, Troy Franklin, Javon Baker, Jalen McMillan at 29, 30, 31. Tavian Sanders in there at 32. Luke McCaffrey at 33. Dez Walker at 34. Tyrone Tracy Jr. at 35. And then Bucky Irving, Will Shipley, Isaac Arendo, Audrey Gesteme, Theo Johnson, Eric All. That takes me into my early 40s. Kamani Vidal, just to kind of give you where I am about the top 40 or so. So there it is, guys. Detailed Dynasty rookie rankings, my thought process, how I would have guys tiered, how I would maybe move guys around. I am sure I will make a lot of adjustments to this, but I did want to kind of get it out there, and I will continue to tweak it. I will. Anybody who has the rankings notebook will see them. I will also be continuing to update people on Twitter as well once they make bigger changes. Not every little fine change I'll be tweeting out there. That's what, if you have the rankings notebook, you'll see them all the time. But when I make significant changes, I'll put a new tweet out there showing how I've changed it and mixed it up a little bit. So there it is. Get over to the website, ssfootball.com. Fastest and easiest way to get over to the premium content tab. And for $9.99, you can get access to all of these rankings, all of our premium content. We greatly appreciate it, as I talked about earlier. So, on behalf of our sound tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.